What's going on, everybody? All right, let's start off with a joke. How many college students does it take to make a snowball? I wish I could tell you the rest of the joke, but it would just be too offensive for them to hear. I'm just kidding. This is the Big Shoe Podcast. It's three. One to bend over, another to cup the ball, and a third to complain that making a snowball is actually a microaggression towards all other forms of water.
On today's menu, we're going to be talking about lizard brain, the higher brain, idea labs, echo chamber, universities, politics, human history, procrastination, happiness, and social media.
Let's go. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Noah.
And I'm your host, Zach.
And this is the Big Chew Podcast.
Now, before we get started, we just want to let you know that each episode we do, we spend a lot of time on preparation.
That's right. We carefully comb through each long form podcast and then break it down for only the juiciest bits for you guys. We compare notes, we debate, and then we elaborate for you.
Yeah, so when you learn something in this podcast, we ask that you share with someone you know, and you go ahead and leave a comment and review about what was most interesting to you.
And don't forget to check us out on all of our socials. It will be in the description along with our sponsors. So press that like button and subscribe. That way you don't miss any future Big Chews.
So get ready to chow down and knowledge up. Let's begin this Big Chew podcast.
Let's do it. Okay, so who do we talk about? This convo was from the podcast. We're switching it up. It's the podcast called Honestly with Miss Barry Weiss, and she had Tim Urban on.
Now, Tim Urban has become one of the internet's most popular writers with wry stick figure illustrations, the occasionally epic prose on everything from procrastination to artificial intelligence. Urban's blog, Wait But Why, has been garnered millions of unique page views, thousands of patrons, and famous fans like Elon Musk. He gave a very famous TED Talk, Inside the Mind of a Master Procrastinator, which is awesome. And his newest book is titled, What's Our Problem? A Self-Help for Society.
Yeah, so great podcast. This one was like an hour and 30 minutes. And Zach, what'd you think about it?
I really like the pulling the lens back and kind of like looking at all of humanity's style that he uses to describe what's all of our problem and the self-help society. And Barry Weiss asked some really good questions. I kind of like went into that. So I like that overview, like looking down on humanity, what's going on, where are we at today? And I thought it was really interesting. I think more people should hear it. That's why we're covering it. You know, it's definitely worth our time.
Yeah.
What about you?
I always like to find, you know, words are so important. And a lot of times when emotions get in the way, the right words don't come out. And I love to find when someone can eloquently kind of break down and parse out what it is about, like, I guess certain political aspects or like the climate of the United States, and like say it in an eloquent way where you go, that's what I don't like about the wokeness, or, you know, in the same way, like, and by the way, I'm not like the woke people bother me just as much as like strict, like really over the top far right people. But I love being able to break it down in a way where it's like, oh, that's why this bothers me, or this is why this is the state that we're in. Does that make sense?
That's where it came from. Like being explained, you're like, oh, that's why. And yeah, I think this shed a lot of light on that for sure.
Yeah. So let's dive into it.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and start off. So one of the first things mentioned by Tim is how interesting it is for people to tell him the topics to stay away from and to like not speak about. He says that in itself is a huge red flag for society, and it made him really curious. You know, that got him thinking on a much bigger topic. That led to the book, you know, What's Our Problem? A Self-Help Book for Society.
Yeah. So then Barry asks, how do we get to this place now where we need help? And this led to something really cool to think about. Tim broke down a brief history of humanity in a really unique way. So here it is. If the story of humanity was written out in a 1,000-page book, where each page represents 250 years, so that'd be 250,000 years, essentially pages 1 through 950, nothing much is happening. Then page 976 kind of starts. Then Christianity isn't even born until page 993. And 95% of human history is pretty slow. Then in this last 5%, it's this massive page turn.
Now, speaking of like humanity and language was a huge part of being able to pass stories down like into a tribe. Then the whole tribe knows. And from there, almost a huge human collective of knowledge begins to kind of stack up. Now, putting things on tablets, that then reaches millions of more people. Then books start to reach billions of people, and the exact wording was written and meant, like, it was written in a way where it was meant to be said. You can read it, it's the same. He mentions this has an exponential effect.
And we're about to get into the big chew to play off of this. But if you like us, if you like the podcast, if you've learned something just so far or any of our previous episodes, give us a like, give us a follow, give us a share. We'd really appreciate it. And now time for the big chew. No.
As a species, progress in all areas gets faster and faster. It goes from taking 200 years to achieve what we did in the previous 10,000 years, all the way down to taking a few decades just to achieve more than we ever have before in all of human history combined.
Right. So if you look at the last page of this book of human history, and he says that the page is the last 0.1% of the book. So that would be the 1770s to today. The last page of the 0.1% is exponential in change. Crazy stuff.
That's what's huge. Now, he mentions how exciting it is and how scary it is that we have godlike technology, but it was only really in the last 250 years that a democracy type of government kind of began its trial and error in the first place.
Mm. So a liberal democracy is an invention, and he mentions that it was built to last centuries. We were talking about the Constitution and how amendments can be written over time to adjust for known society and its operations. He uses an example of a house. This way of governing ourselves is the house we grew up in. Over time, we added to the house, we upgraded the house, we built more rooms, etc. Our parents, our grandparents, they all took part in this house. It's been a few generations since someone in our family has been outside of this house.
Now, he mentions that, of course, first-generation immigrants to America, in this example, seem to be the most thankful for the house when they get here. But the people who grew up in the house, who are already here, just see it as the house, and that's all what they've always had.
Yeah. So let's talk about the lizard brain versus your higher brain. So survival brain, primitive brain, lizard brain, whatever you want to call it, it's basically our pre-programmed survival instincts. Tim says it starts off thinking when we are born and operating like it's 30,000 BC. And not only that, but it will never not think that it's 30,000 BC. We will have this lizard brain part of our brain.
Now, the higher mind can override the lizard brain and think. He uses the example of a lizard brain allowing you to binge on candy or like a terrible food, because the lizard brain is thinking, well, I'm in a world where calories are hard to come by. And yet the higher brain can say, okay, this is really unhealthy. It will make you feel like shit. Don't eat all the candy. He mentions there is a constant tug of war in our mind between our higher mind and our lower lizard brain that kind of spills over into society today.
So let's talk about the higher mind, the lizard brain, lower mind when it comes to politics. So the higher mind is open to challenge and to seeking the truth. The lower mind is there. It's basically saying there are good people and there are bad people. It's very, binary. So there's good rules, there's bad rules. If it's out of the tribe's beliefs, then the lower mind bands together and denies new ideas in any sense.
Yeah, one thing I didn't even say in here, but it's like the lizard brain confines to the tribe to survive. Like, that's why it's like that. So, of course. Now, for example, there are, in terms of lizard brain, there are 24-hour news networks that didn't exist. Now they do, and they're kind of for one side of the political spectrum. And they make more money for political entertainment versus, like, actually sharing the news. Mm. Now, the primitive lower mind gets addicted to this news just like it gets addicted to any, like, reality TV shows or, like, the candy. He says they are selling to the primitive mind directly. And that's what makes money, and we all have it.
Yeah, it's easy to sell to the tribal mind. That's why social media is so divided, because it's easy to sell to tribal ideas. So let's talk about the idea lab versus an echo chamber, and we'll expand on this later too. So idea lab example. Groups of friends have their own culture, right? Language, jokes, how they spend their time, all of that. He says that an idea lab is a group where truth comes first and respectful disagreement is welcome. When people don't identify fully with an idea to themselves, he says it keeps the whole group in a higher mind state.
Now, with an echo chamber, it's the opposite. There's no challenge. There's no disagreement. One person does one thing and everyone else follows. And maybe most of the time, they don't even realize it. The primitive mind takes this as like tribal survival. The echo chamber is constantly talking about people who disagree, for example, or don't do or take action towards certain things because it will kill the vibe of the whole tribe. It's kind of like out of fear of being cast out of the tribe, go with the tribe. There's no new information, always just more echoes.
Mm. So let's switch up and talk about universities. So this is where it's all really coming from. Universities are supposed to be the ultimate idea laboratories, meaning any and every idea comes in. the pursuit of truth was the main goal of universities. It used to be. Now, the problem with universities today is that they've transferred from idea labs to idea supremacists, meaning one idea sticks and others cannot be heard or expressed.
Now, according to one recent survey, 52% of college students reported they often refrain from expressing views on political and social issues in classrooms because of concern how it be perceived, concern for the reputation, and concern for their grades, which I don't know if you had that experience. I didn't feel bad about saying it, but that professor didn't like it. People didn't like it. I think other people would be too uncomfortable to say much.
I remember 10 years ago, I would be a lot more likely to express, you know, political views than I would now. But I still would.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is super important. I would say maybe one of the most important things of the podcast. There are two completely different things that are both called social justice. And we're going to break them down. The first one is liberal social justice. And this is the classic definition of liberalism. So its goal of classic liberalism is to make the United States more perfect. Classic liberalism believes that the Constitution is great, but we don't always succeed in keeping the Constitution's promises. This classic liberalism believes that some people in the nation are treated unfairly, and that should be corrected, but the Constitution, again, remains strong. Think MLK, the Civil Rights Movement, suffrage for women voting back in 1920, and the Gay Rights Movement in 2012. This classic liberalism uses tools that the Constitution already has in place to then fix actual injustices. Under this classic liberalism, each individual is sacred. It is not about the color of your skin, but about the character that you possess.
And then you have the social justice fundamentalism, or you can call it wokeness. Now, this group of people believe the nation is evil because it was built by flawed people and that the whole nation is rotten to its core. Like saying that the house that was built is bad in the first place. This group believes that at its foundation, the Constitution was built to power the already powerful. Think white supremacy or patriarchy. This group thinks that liberalism itself is an invention by the powerful to still hold down the oppressed and keep the power in power. This group wants to be liberated from the nation. This group wants a revolution.
Mm. Now, these two groups have opposite goals, not different goals, but opposite. Liberal or classic social justice wants the nation to be better. Social justice fundamentalism wants to tear the whole thing down and start over.
Now, liberal social justice wants to overhaul norms and policies and laws. Social justice fundamentalism wants to overhaul the whole nation.
So fundamentalists think free speech is dangerous. It allows platforms for quote-unquote dangerous ideas. In wokeness or fundamentalism, the group matters much more than the individual. For that group. So they make broad generalizations about groups of people, like white people or black people. There's a common enemy tone to the wokeness thinking as opposed to a common humanity tone.
Now, equality of opportunity is a classic liberal staple. Fundamentalists believe that because groups are the same, there's no such thing as equality of opportunity. That's why they want equality of outcome, not opportunity. You can't have freedom with equality of outcome.
I think that's one of the things. Huge. I wanted to it's so important. Everyone gets the same outcome, the equality of outcome, then there's no freedom. That means basically what this is going to is Marxist ideas. But, right. So then it gets tricky. Yeah, go ahead.
Gets tricky, gets sneaky. There's some examples of things that appear nice, but really have a different meaning. For example, saying, I want a safe space. This really means I want a space that doesn't have free speech in it.
And then there's the harm principle. So, hey, these words are harmful, therefore it must be stopped. Really what this means is you want censorship and control.
So back to the universities. In the 60s, classic liberal social justice, there was a major thing at universities. Now, social fundamentalism began around this time as well, but wasn't as popular. Universities have gone from a healthy mix of conservative and liberal to almost entirely fundamentalist liberal. The ratio of professors left to right has gone from 4-1 to 17-1 to 40-1 and even 100-1 in certain universities. When an environment is purple or a healthy mix of red and blue ideals, it has a defense against extremism. Also, they balance each other out. But now that it's all basically bright blue, it becomes weak to extremism.
Yeah, which is, you have 40 fundamentalist professors to every one conservative, or even if they're just liberal and it was conservative, it still just doesn't allow for a lot of nuance or, you know, different ideals. So, okay, all this said, why is this so important? Universities educate our young people. right? These have become our future leaders. They will run the country in 20 to 30 years. They get into political power positions, corporate power positions. They become mothers and fathers. Universities are meant to teach a wide variety of lenses. You're supposed to come out of university a better thinker and have new perspectives. Now, instead of a wide variety of lenses, universities teach one lens. A new idea gets taught in a class, that professor gets fired. A new speaker comes to campus, that speaker gets boycotted, so on and so forth. Universities are now teaching students to be intellectual thought bullies.
So to further why this is really important, universities are meant to be truth seekers, right? They are the center of academic research and science. What society knows is basically what the universities produce. So when you have an ideology that doesn't believe in truth culture, it affects the entire nation. It affects what can and cannot be researched. Works that confirm social justice fundamentalism ideals are spread. Like work that doesn't, doesn't get retracted. So this is bad for knowledge production, education for our future leaders, and for truth seeking. Often what happens at universities ends up happening everywhere else just a little bit later. Social media, you know, start universities, social and cultural fads always start there. It's a giant ripple effect, or that's the fear.
Yeah. So let's talk about procrastination mind and why human beings are such skilled procrastinators. So the primate that we are in the world we are programmed to be in didn't really have long-term projects that often. You had to get food, survive, mate, and occasionally fight. You conserved energy if you weren't doing those things.
Now, the world we live in now is advanced, and the way we to be successful and feel satisfaction now is to think really, really long-term and work hard on things today that we may not get the fruits for months, maybe even years. We have to work really hard to deny instant gratification. It's practically in our DNA.
And there's two kinds of procrastination. So there's regular procrastination. This is like when you get behind on deadlines. You're late to a meeting. You're unable to do work until you start to panic and then cram and get all the work done.
Then there's like the sneaky procrastination. This is like not seeing their family enough, spending time with parents before they pass, seeing your kids more before they move out or go to college.
You know, we have this time delusion in our head, and that time delusion is kind of thinking that we have unlimited time. Tim used this great example. He said, let's imagine you have a really close friend, and you see that friend only once every 2 years, all right? And in a perfect world, let's say that you both happen to live to 80, and you're currently 30 years old. That means that every 2 years you get to see him, you would have a total of 25 more times of seeing that really close friend in your life. And when you put it like that, 25 more times of seeing someone you love and care about, that's very finite, right?
So what do you do about this? Now, if you look at time right in the face and recognize how limited your time is, you have two options. You can really appreciate the limited time you have more, or you can prioritize your time and increase the activities you do so you get more of them before time is up.
Right. To kind of capitalize on that, here's a crazy and eye-opening fact. The average person that graduates high school has now spent 93% of their total time they'll ever spend with their parents. It's over after they graduate high school, 93% of it.
Which gets back into phones, computers, procrastination, and really our happiness. Now, Tim makes the analogy that if you have junk food in the house, you're much more likely to eat the junk food. Well, we have junk food in our brains right now, and it's in our pockets. And every time we sit down at a computer, it's incredibly hard to resist the procrastination of these devices.
Yeah, and social media has made it impossible not to compare ourselves to others. On social media, we image craft, meaning we craft an image of what we'd like others to see or think of us. It's not real. It's not reality. People don't really broadcast their failures or their shitty vacations or their truly bad days, and we only see this image crafted version. And as humans, how we feel about our own life is actually almost entirely derived from comparisons. With social media, these comparisons are in our faces 24/7, and Theodore Roosevelt said it best. Comparison is the thief of joy.
So what can we do about this? For starters, be more present in the real world. Leave your phone behind. If you're going to be on your phone, follow people with views that you detest or completely disagree with. That way you're not in an echo chamber. You know, follow pages that are educational and informative. This is on the micro level.
Yeah, then the macro level is to eventually have social media companies make algorithms that don't reward bombastic and outrageous views. You know, to perhaps change the hate mongering that gets all the attention, because this promotes more hate, more division, etc.
Now, to end on a nice note, there is a finite number of everything. There's a finite number you will hang out with your family, that you'll see your friends, that you will jump into an ocean or pet a dog. There's a finite number of dinners you will eat and sunsets you'll see.
Yeah, find number of, you know, times you'll drive your car or smell fresh baked cookies. So enjoy them all. Make changes today that give you agency over the things that you can do and the people you can see. So that way you can spend more time doing the things you want and with the people that you love. And on that note, we're going to end this Big Chew podcast. So we will see you on episode number 42, and we'll catch you guys later.
See you.
See you.